turn to Ruth chapter 3, and I'd like to get one volunteer, please, to read chapter 3 for us. Somebody could read 3? I had that same problem, Zach. I know, I had the same problem.
Too much pressure.
I know, I had the same thing that happens to me.
Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young woman you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourselves, and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies, then go and uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And she replied, "All that you say I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she said, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning." So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. And he said, "Bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out." So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, 'You must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" She replied, "Wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today."
Great. Thank you, Zach. Okay, so we had a great discussion on Sunday, talking a lot about question number 3. To our ears, Naomi's plan seems strange. And look at the details there. And we started that, and I'd like to pick up with that and see if we missed anything. Just to be super accurate, this was not barley, as pointed out to one of our students, so I decided I'd go ahead and show you what barley looks like in case you wanted to know the difference. Can you tell the difference? Anyways, okay. We talked about... That one was for you, Roy.
Thank you.
We talked about how this is the picture that's painted. It's interesting when you're looking for images how it... We've been using this term in one of the previous classes of confirmation bias. What does confirmation bias mean? Yeah.
You hear what you want to hear.
Yeah, you basically hear what you want to hear, and the painters are painting what they want, message they want you to see. And there's a lot to these paintings. There's more than you know. A lot of, like, they wonder what people think. Well, landscape architecture is just about plants. No, landscape architecture is a lot about compiling scenes just like this out in the real world to evoke certain emotions out of you. Whether I'm doing a healing garden in a hospital, or I'm doing a schoolyard, or I'm doing a park, it's a lot about composing something to get emotions or to trigger thoughts or ideas. And that's how these paintings are. So I think we got to be careful when we see these, because they're going to trigger how we think of things. We did talk about it that it's actually this big open area. It's much more utilitarian. Got to get the work done. It's how they did these threshing floors. And we talked about that on Sunday. When we looked at this plan being strange, but as we step into this, it's funny what Lisa said. Hope you don't mind me picking on you. I was joking that if I wasn't here, I was just going to have you guys go out in the auditorium. And she says, "Hey, we could just send the guys out and the girls could stay here and have a great class." And I thought, that's an interesting comment. Okay? That's an interesting comment. I'm not going to ask you why she would say that. But one of the first things I said actually to Heather Bird was like, "Man, I feel like so intimidated in this class. Like, I should just go step out or maybe stay up here and let you ladies teach this class." Because I think that's the perspective that's so powerful here, is a woman's perspective when we're talking about Ruth and Naomi. And I thought, I want the guys to shut up for tonight. But it is interesting that a lot of times, speaking of confirmation bias, if you think, approach things very rational, you get to the facts, you read through it, you understand all the Hebrew words, you start even having your own confirmation bias of how you want this scripture to read or what it's really saying. And I think this is another way to think about what David and I have been asking you to do when you're looking at these characters, is look at it from the emotional side. Look at it from the rational side. It's a story. It's okay to talk about things. We can't come to any conclusions that aren't there, and we can keep repeating that. But I think it's okay to look at it from both sides. You know, from both those sides. I'm not saying women are emotional either. I know women are rational too. I'm just saying it's more natural for you, as you guys know, to think more into what's going on in the story than us guys that want to just read it line by line. I happen to be very odd that I switch very back and forth from passion and rational, which makes me crazy. So if you're a guy who switches back and forth, you are crazy. So my nickname, my race team, is Drama. That's my nickname. Because I am very passionate, I'm very emotional, I'm also very rational, and so I guess that makes you crazy. But anyways, I want you to think about that when you're reading this, because I'm going to lead up to the big question for tonight, right? So we're going to warm up by talking about this. Naomi's plan seems strange. Look at the details in these verses, right? And these are some of the things we talked about. This washing and anointing. Why would Naomi tell her to wash and anoint before she went down? Why did she go to the threshing floor at that time of night? And we talked about on Sunday, both of these are leading up to basically a wedding proposal, right? If you think about it, how long has it been since Ruth was introduced to Boaz till we get to the threshing floor scene?
Well, we don't know, because she went all the way through the barley and the wheat harvest.
Yeah, quite a while.
Yeah.
Right?
I was thinking too, it's probably longer than we realized.
Mm-hmm. Because I want to ask the question, why did Ruth and Naomi instigate this whole thing, right? They may have been tired of waiting. Like, we need a redeemer here, right? The cloak, we talked about the importance of clothes and how important that is in the story. Wait until he's done eating and drinking and went to sleep. Why did she wait? Why did Naomi tell her to wait? Why did she not want to be seen? And we were saying, because it was to not give the wrong idea to those. He who was probably hard at work, there wasn't much time to talk to him during the day. Also, it's a pretty risky to come and talk to him about such an important topic. You know, you wouldn't want to do that in front of everybody else, right? You'd want some privacy to have this conversation, just like we talked about in case it went wrong. Yeah, Jeff.
With her coming to him at the threshing floor at that time of night, it wasn't going to throw any embarrassment on the Redeemer who was closer.
Mm-hmm.
If Boaz had said no, it all would have stopped right there. Nobody would have heard anything else about it, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's going to take the next step, then he'll raise it to the person mm-hmm. who's a Redeemer. And they're not, Naomi and Ruth aren't either embarrassing him or putting themselves at risk for embarrassing him by handling it. This is probably just about the most discreet way that you could do this.
Or if it was at the gate, it may have been a whole different situation,
right?
In front of everybody else. Yeah. I agree. Uncovering his feet. We talked about that on Sunday. Did we talk about that? That was another strange part of the story, right? Was it because he's cold? Is there something else going on there? And then what you said, Jeff, what Jeff was saying, that Boaz will take it from there. If Boaz knew the responsibility with the decision to take it, and Boaz decided to take it from there, right? Why all the eating and drinking? We talked about that. And then why is Boaz there to begin with? We talked about that. So I'm going to skip ahead to the big question. We're all a little warm here. Okay, I'm going to skip through this. This one. Is there anything inappropriate going on here? How do you know? Don't read into what's not there, but read what's there, and let's talk about this. Is there anything inappropriate going on there?
Before you go there, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So the person who was the Redeemer,
mm-hmm.
would that have been like a closer relative?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
We don't know. It doesn't say for sure who it could have been. We just know it was closer relative to Elimelech than Boaz was. Yeah. Yes. Okay, yeah, go ahead. Start us off.
Okay, so I, when you're reading through here, it doesn't, nothing inappropriate is mentioned. So I don't think anything inappropriate is going on. However, Ruth is, again, I go back to this word vulnerable. If Boaz was not an honorable man, she could have been raped. He could have done anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
But she and Naomi obviously trust him to do what's right. And I think that that is the thing that really jumps out at me when I read this. Because if anyone had any inclination at all to do something inappropriate, she would have been at risk of being the victim of that.
Mm-hmm.
Victim, in whatever way you want to look at that. And the fact that Naomi says, all that you... No, wait. Where she says, do whatever he tells you. Where is that?
Verse 4.
He'll tell you what to do.
Verse 4.
Yeah, so...
And he will tell you what to do? And she replied, all you say I will do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's nothing in my mind that can convince me that she was not vulnerable, yet trusting that he would do the right thing.
Okay.
And it sounds like he did do the right thing. And I think that that's, the fact that that seems so, it jumps out at me that way, I think that's the message I am supposed to be getting from that.
Okay.
This message of trust and she trusted him.
Okay. Nobody sees anything inappropriate going on here?
Well,
yes.
In verse 16, did you dig around to find out more meaning to when Naomi said, "And how did you fare, my daughter?" So I did, and one commentator said, she's asking, like, who are you now, my daughter?
Mm-hmm.
And meaning, are you his wife? Or, mm-hmm. You know, so that was interesting.
Yeah, what has their state in the relationship changed during this encounter?
So that was an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
She asked.
Yeah. And it's interesting, not to pick on you, Janet, but even me, when I read this question, when we think inappropriate, you automatically think, did they sleep together? But there could be other layers of inappropriateness, like her even approaching him to begin with. Is that inappropriate? Was she wearing what she was wearing and smelling like she was smelling? Was that inappropriate? Was it inappropriate to be at this floor? There's all kinds of questions. Was it inappropriate? But it is interesting that that's the first one we go to. And speaking of artist renditions, this is how most of them are, right? It's like there's something intimate going on here. This is the cleanest one I could find. A lot of them are like real lacy, off-the-shoulder kind of things. Nothing really racy, but just like a much more suggestive things going on with this uncovering the feet, right? So, it is interesting, and I think it's worth continuing this discussion. So, anything else?
I suppose if somebody wanted confirmation bias, they
mm-hmm.
say they were all inappropriate here. His scheming mother-in-law, you cheat this other closer relative out of his, she's all dolling up. What's with the feet and the foot fetish thing going on? The whole thing is weird.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want confirmation bias, you could go there.
You could go to that side. Yeah.
I don't think any of those things really are mm-hmm. true, but the whole thing with Naomi is interesting. Like at the end where she says, that last verse, say, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today.
Mm-hmm.
How does she know? Like, she's this sincere or something. She sees all this stuff ahead of her.
Very sure, right? In both cases. Naomi seems to be very sure. about how this outcome is going to turn out. You asked me earlier if I've looked into it. It's amazing when you look into these things how far they will go, and these words. And I have some up on a slide. I just want to have the conversation before I start showing some of the words. Some of these words, like any of these words, I'll hold it. Let's keep talking because I don't want to spoil it. Did Christy, go ahead.
Just call her virtuous, and that word is only used in Proverbs 31.
Yes.
And as far as Naomi is concerned, and Boaz, his character has been shown.
Mm-hmm.
She knew he was a man that would take care of the matter. He wouldn't rest or take his time about it because he knew that it was important to their welfare. I think her asking Boaz to marry her, you know, might have been a little different, but then he sees it, he's probably not pursuing it because she's younger than him and there's better, maybe, unknown. But again, we don't know all the
mm-mm.
girls that
yeah.
come on, so.
Yeah. And did I see a hand over here? Yeah.
I was looking at verse 10.
Mm-hmm.
You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first kindness?
So that's a great question. Before I answer, anybody have any thoughts on what the first kindness was? You've made this last kindness greater than the first.
Taking care of her mother-in-law.
Yeah. Did you hear that? Yeah, taking care of her mother-in-law. And actually, isn't that interesting how he says that you're making this kindness even greater than you taking care of your mother-in-law? It kind of gives me chills if you think about it, how Boaz felt about her, almost unworthy. He almost kind of is so humbled and feels so unworthy that she would do this. One of the translations on that young men, that's not just random young men. That's a very specific word, meaning like the young men in town. That's like, there is young men that are better looking and have money that you have not chased in town and chose me instead.
You don't think it's an age deal?
Hmm?
You don't think it's age related?
No, I think it is, but I'm just saying it's not a general term. There's a group of young men in Bethlehem that he is referencing when he is saying that. Not just, hey, you could have had somebody younger. It's like, hey, those young guys down there in Bethlehem, you could have been with them. But why are you choosing me? Why are you asking me, right? Which I think is, it kind of gives me chills to think about it, right? Did I miss a hand? Yeah, Jeff?
It's interesting with Naomi. She knows that he's winnowing. You know, it's almost like she's stalking him. Mm-hmm. You know, she's got him scheduled out. She knows mm-hmm. where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
And then she knows that he's going to get on this right away. I think she knew that Ruth was getting under his skin,
mm-hmm.
you know. But at the same time, she also knows that he's going to do this the right way. I mean, he wanted to make sure. He knew there was another kinsman that was closer. And he was going to do this. He was going to do things right by Ruth and Naomi and by his other kinsmen. Because that's the kind of person he was.
And the law. Right? He knew what the law was very clearly and was not going to violate that. I think we talked about that a little bit on Sunday about why he was saying to her, don't let anybody know that you're here. Because he didn't want this whole Redeemer thing to get messed up, right? Because there were specific steps to that. Didn't want to violate the law. Yeah, go ahead.
So, yeah, you're doing a great job because this would really be a very short discussion.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I just, that's why I'm stuck on verses 13 and 14, because verse 13, he tells her to slide down until the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then in verse 14, so she lay at his feet until the morning. So if there's anything else that went on inappropriate, you have to put it right there somewhere in these verses. And once we start doing that, then we're trying to change what the text says.
Yeah.
It's God's word.
Yeah.
And we don't do that with any other passages, mm-hmm. so why would I do it with this passage?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's like you said, a confirmation bias.
Yeah, unless you're confirmation bias. I just want to make sure we're not doing it on either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good discussion to have.
Yeah.
I think hearing these comments is very helpful because it makes it even more airtight.
Mm-hmm.
That God didn't leave any room for that.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like they want us to make sure we get the point of the story and
she's
not.
She's at his feet. That's
right? Yeah.
And I have to ask, well, did she leave his feet?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't say.
So I, stays there till morning.
I get in that territory of what it doesn't say.
Yeah,
that's,
correct.
That's always problematic.
Correct, correct. But I think, and I totally agree with you, and to jump to the end, I generally agree with what everybody's talking about. It is interesting, though. I don't think it's as sterile as he was just, and I think I said this on Sunday, just doing his duty. There's obviously human interaction going on. There's attraction. I think Jeff brought up, she has got Boaz's attention on what's going on there. So whether it's beauty or just having somebody give him attention or whatever, there's more to the story, I think, because we are talking about humans. I wouldn't say it's inappropriate, but I think it's more than just, hey, let's check a bunch of five boxes and let's live together forever, right? I think there's more to it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the thing that has to be looked at, I think people try to read something in, like Terry was saying, between 13 and 14,
mm-hmm.
but where that becomes textually inconsistent is also with Boaz's attitude in 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
He's going through this long dissertation with Ruth, this outsider, about what the order of operations needs to be to make this thing right, how virtuous she is, and how he's explaining to her, hey, this near relative has a better thing, and if he'll do his duty, then good, fine.
Mm-hmm.
He'll do his duty, I lose out. That kind of discussion of, I lose out on what I would prefer to do, he'll do his duty, and he is the nearer redeemer, that doesn't go hand in hand with somebody who's going to be like, also, by the way, let's let something happen between verse 13 and 14 that really should not, under both the law and under the kind of attitude it displays in just the verse or two before. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, actually it might be more readable of evidence, that maybe our thought that there might be others there who could watch the grain for him, maybe might have been wrong, because maybe there was no one else to watch the grain, else he would have said, let me walk you back. It's dangerous mm-hmm. enough to walk back, but you're going to stay till it's twilight enough that you can move safely but not be recognized, and that's when you're going to go. And otherwise, just stay right over there, and we'll sleep. I'll sleep, you'll sleep.
They didn't sleep.
They probably worried my way. Worried all night.
Yeah, I don't think Ruth was sleeping much. Right? So it's interesting, because you also answered my other question. Why does it say in verse 14, but arose before one could recognize another? In a love novel, that would be, there'd be all kinds of juice in that. But we're just supposed to say one could recognize another, like, meaning she's going back to town and nobody will recognize her, because everybody can't recognize each other at that time in the morning. Not to pick on you, Luke, but that's the way I read that too. So maybe there's nothing in it. That's fine. That's why we're having the talk. Here's some questions I had when I was reading it before I came to my conclusion. Did they sleep together? So please explain 14. That's what I just said. I'd kind of take it the same way as Luke. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? What this term means, with before they could recognize another? Why have that specific detail in there?
Well, is it just talking about those two? Is it talking about everybody that's down there?
I think that's what Luke's bringing up, which I think is the logical. Yeah.
Well, wouldn't there be rumors if people didn't know that she was sleeping at his feet and they saw her leaving where he had been sleeping that night, people would talk?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that many thousands of years ago, people would still talk.
Yeah.
Just like they would
today. It's a small little farm community.
But that's why she had on the cloak, so nobody would know.
The heavy cloak, yep.
And she was covered pretty good, so even if they saw her, they wouldn't know who it was.
Mm-hmm. How old was Boaz?
42.
How old was he?
He's older than she was.
Older than she was, that's all we know. She keeps saying my daughter. He keeps saying my daughter.
Well, he doesn't call himself a young man, right?
No. It's funny, like, even when David and I were talking, we both come to the same conclusion that he was probably this older bachelor guy that doesn't have a wife, and so it would be exciting to have this young foreign girl interested in you. That was David and I in talking, that was the first thing we were saying. It's interesting. Ruth's religious background, would that play into it? She may not have the same kind of scruples. We're hoping that she does now that she's now in Israel and is trying to do the right thing, but she didn't understand this levirate marriage thing. Naomi sending her down there to do this made me think about it. Would that be anything that would cause anything inappropriate?
I have a question about
that.
I mean, isn't that part of the whole point about her Uncovering his feet, laying at his feet, returning to his feet,
mm-hmm.
sign of humility,
yeah.
and almost abasing herself. And mm-hmm. versus if she was a woman who was trying to play a harlot or whatever
yeah.
you want to call it, that's not how she would have gone in there. She would have woken him out of his drunken stupor and done what she had to do, right? She went, she laid at his feet. He got startled later on, woke up, realized she was there.
There's a lot of very obvious that nothing probably went on.
I mean,
yeah. He was startled.
That's not how she's playing it. I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot of other ways to play it if that's what you're going for.
Yeah, yeah. And then this is the point I think I made. I kind of let the cat out of the bag a little bit on Sunday when I said the strongest point to me, why would Naomi send her down there if she didn't trust Boaz's character and Ruth's character to be in this situation together, right? I'm trying to give Naomi the credit that I think she deserves, that knowing that this is the right, appropriate time to do this engagement, you know, to engage together. Are they engaged, though, at this point?
No.
There's a lot of terminology, like when you look at Ezekiel 16:8 of the covering over the cloak, you're like married at that point. Are they engaged?
No.
What would it take to be engaged?
Well, because, you know, that's what made the first guy back out. He said, you know, not only have to buy that piece of land, you have to take the Moabite lady. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, I can't do that.
When have you officially taken the Moabite lady in Israel in this time? If you were doing this marriage, levirate marriage, when is it officially are you married? Do we know?
Well, I know that was a deal breaker.
Well, the turning point would be when the next closest kin takes a shoe off. Then she's...
Okay.
And the next kin after him would be free to marry, so that would...
So would there have to be an official marriage, I guess, is the other question I'm asking. Like, are they married at this point?
No. They would have a ceremony.
They would have some kind of a ceremony, probably. Yeah. Were you going to say something?
Culture.
Yeah.
Okay. Certainly no expert in the marriage customs.
Mm-hmm. Neither am I.
Right?
Yeah.
But my understanding, certainly Jesus' name, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bridegroom goes to the bride's house, mm-hmm. gets her, and brings her to his house in front of everybody. And when that's done, then they're married.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a ceremony, doesn't look much like that.
Yeah.
I think the key is that the relationship is whatever accomplished in the sight of the population.
And the reason why I bring that up is because that is one of the things some of the commentaries went to, is like once the robe is covered over her, they were making an argument that they could have been consummating their marriage at that point. So that it was okay to move forward. And I disagree with that, but I just think it's interesting that that's brought up when they're talking about this covering over of the robe. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say, and it's not long, it doesn't say that he actually covers her, right?
No.
She requested, spread your wings over your servant for your redeemer.
Mm-hmm.
So whether the wings is, you know, his garment or just his intentions, right? I'm not entirely sure. But it doesn't say in the rest of the story that he actually spread his cloak over her.
Mm-hmm.
He just said, lie here until the morning. Because mm-hmm. I have this other religious or lawful duty to this other, you know, closer redeemer to do first.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't take care of business. But he made it clear he wants her.
Yeah.
Like you said, I mean, I think he's fired up.
Yeah.
It's like, sweet, she didn't go after these young guys. She likes me. She's a hard worker. He's all in.
Yeah. That's what it seems to be. Yeah, yeah.
The reason why I agree with that statement is because he's sound asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing he says when he figures out that it's Ruth is that he compliments her. And that's the first thing that he says out of his mouth from being sound asleep is, so he's obviously has some type of feeling for her, some type of good association with her, to have that be the first thing that he says is he compliments her.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, this kindness is greater than what
than
she
the,
showed her.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do think he's pretty excited.
And it was brought up, he had to take care of some business first before they could be consummating the marriage anyways, right? I think that's the biggest argument on that point. It is interesting, so one of the other points that's brought up is how the language is, when, and this is one of the other points they make, who are these they people? You can't believe how many commentaries, not the ones that I have here. These are the ones David recommended. All of these ones are taking the route we're going to go in a second about saying, like you guys have been doing. But there's so much out there, including the art, trying to make something out of something that's not there, right? When it says, and when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Now listen to the way. Now it's been Boaz, Ruth, he, she, right? Look what happens in verse 8. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. Mm-hmm. And they're saying there's some language changes there that mean something. There's also the Hebrew word, and I didn't write it down, about this whole, when he startled, the term is actually like grasp or embraced or grabbed, and it's used like when Samson grabbed a hold of the columns to push it down. It was a very hard, you know, something grabbed onto, and so they're trying to make something out of that. It's just interesting, and I asked the question, which I think is worthy to ask, why do people do that? Why is there so much on the internet and books trying to make something here that's not here?
Because a lot of people would like to fit everything they read into, frankly, the worst of our society,
mm-hmm.
right? I would suggest. And they're certainly eager to find flaws in God's Word.
But a lot of these people are like, say, they're Bible scholars.
Well, you can actually be a very, as I understand, there are people who are excellent Bible scholars and atheists. You know, they're really good at the words and all that. They just don't believe it. Anyway, I think that's the 21st century trying mm-hmm. to, frankly, besmirch what happened here in
Yeah, and it's the same way they'll take the Christ and they have the movie The Last Temptation of Christ, which I never saw because all the bumper stickers when I was in high school says, do not see this movie. I never saw it, but I understand the plot was like, well, maybe Christ it wasn't actually perfect, right? And it's like, it's almost, go ahead.
I had to read the novel in college. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, yeah.
There's more to it.
There's more to it, I'm sure. But it is interesting that, and so maybe I'm off base there, but it is interesting that a lot of folks want to try to read more into it and try to dirty up the story more than what it is sometimes. And so I don't ever want people to construe like how I'm taking, just 1 second, taking us on this journey, like I'm trying to do that. I'm just trying to get us to think about it both sides, right? Fairly look at it. But I don't really see it going to an inappropriate state here. Jeff?
If you read Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, there's plenty of instances where the Bible talks about inappropriate relationships between men and women, mm-hmm. and it doesn't pull any punches.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would it all of a sudden be subtle here?
I know.
You know?
And that's where, so like these are some of those words, like uncover. What does it mean when she uncovered him? There, it's all over the place. And it is sometimes used in describing various varieties of illicit sexual relations. But look at the however. It's usually followed by nakedness, like in Leviticus or other some reference. There's some other thing that's associated with it, not just that word that they're trying to read into, right? And in this case, in this reference, it's uncover his feet. It's literally uncovering his feet. There's no more to read into it other than that, right? Yes.
You go down to chapter 4, verse 13,
mm-hmm.
when the time comes for the consummation of this marriage, they're not shy about telling you that happened. So I do not think it is the style of the Hebrew to be shy about.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Same thing, they're saying his feet is a euphemism for sexual organs. However, the passages that they cite fail to make the connection here, right, with this term. And once again, I think this was brought up by somebody, it may have been Jim on Sunday, about Daniel, where the uncovering the feet too is the same thing. The feet is used in that same word in Daniel 10 about his feet. The lie down, and he lied down with her, right? We've read about that in the New Testament, or he knew her. And it always has to be taken in context. I think that's so important, right? The most natural reading of this text is that she slept there until the morning. Not that she slept with Boaz until morning. You guys may say, Ben, why are you dragging us through this? I just think it's important because people are, when you're studying with people, it's they don't want to read into it, and it's good to know this stuff, right? Spread your covering over your maid. When Ruth asked him to spread his covering over her, this was a Hebrew idiom for marriage. That's the part we just talked about, right? And we just talked about. I like this. This is not me. Ruth probably came at night so Boaz wouldn't feel pressured into making a public decision to marry her. For instance, consider how pressured a woman feels when a man proposes to her in front of 30,000 people at a baseball game, right? It's difficult to say no thanks when you're in that position, the same way Ruth didn't want to put Boaz in that difficult position, right? I think that's fair. A couple other quotes. I'm running out of time. Sorry. Hold on. Sorry. Go ahead. Yes.
But, well, about that spread you're covering over your make. I mean, even if she's asking him to make her his wife, and if that's the custom, that that's the way you have a marriage, then she's asking him to, she's not saying, have sex with me. She's saying, make me your wife. And he says, wait, we have to do this other stuff first. And still, so still, there's nothing inappropriate in her proposing to him, and there's nothing inappropriate after he says, wait.
Yeah, remember, Naomi's instructions were, what do you do after you uncover his feet?
He'll take it from there.
He'll take it from there. She didn't know what was next. At least we don't know from the, what's been revealed to us. So she was waiting to see what was next. She was waiting for him to say it. So she was naive at that point, to, potentially, to not understand what the next steps were. Naomi will have to explain to her how this whole levirate marriage thing works. And so she was then waiting on Boaz to take it. And he was being responsible about it, right? Boaz appears to be one of those rare individuals who is motivated by principles, not expediency. He wants to do what is right, regardless of personal preference or convenience, right? Furthermore, he has demonstrated that he can be trusted with the welfare of another. Right? I think that's pretty fair. Here's another one. I like this one. Oh, man. Hold on. Hope I marked it. Boaz is shown quietly handling the situation like a gentleman and not either as an old fool or a village lout. He may be countrified, but he has dignity and restraint. I kind of like those two things about Boaz, right? So further observations. This is some things to have back up that nothing inappropriate as far as when we're talking about sexual context came into play. Boaz was asleep this entire time, and when he awoke, the text says he was startled. If Boaz had just engaged in sex with Ruth, he obviously wouldn't have had been startled. I probably would use different words if I wrote this. This is copying quotes. Second, Boaz also refers to Ruth as a woman of excellence. I think that was brought out. Why would he say that? This is the same phrase used for godly wife we talked about. And third, Boaz was careful to keep and follow the kinsman redeemer laws, even though he clearly loved Ruth and wanted to marry her. This shows his integrity, not his sexual whatever. So I think, how about that for art? Maybe that's a little more appropriate. No, maybe not. Is he too old in that picture? That was the most benign one I could find. And it's the right kind of looking threshing floor, too. It's not a building. They're out on the side of the field. Anyhow. Okay.
He's got an old, he'd really be startled.
Yeah, that's true. Especially if his feet were cold. Old guys don't like their feet cold, do they? Okay. I think we talked about the cultural issues. I think I went back too far. Okay, any other points on that before I move on? I think that was a good discussion. I appreciate you guys indulging me on that discussion. So, what do we learn about Ruth in this situation? You saw the first one. She was taking the initiative in this, which took a lot of courage, right? I think that's something we can take from that. What else can we learn about Ruth from this exchange?
She was obedient to Naomi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She had to feel a little vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yes?
I just think it re-expresses how loyal she is to Naomi, because she could have gone after young men. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have to go after Boaz. She's doing it for Naomi and preserve the line of Naomi's son, who was her husband.
Yeah. Yeah, and thank you. When you brought up the young men, it reminded me about the town again. When they talk about the people, when it says the worthy woman, which verse is that? When he says...
Verse 11,
thank you. When he says, and now my daughter, do not fear, I will do you all that you ask for all my fellow townsmen. That literally means, the literal translation is the people at the gate, which is kind of neat if you think about it, because who hung out at the gate?
The town leaders.
So they're really saying, not only you're worthy just to the town's men, the town leaders, the important people in town, know that you are a worthy woman, which I think is a cool understanding of that term, that fellow townsman there. So anyhow, she was a worthy woman, took the initiative. What else? Yes?
She was concerned about integrity. She got up in the dark and was going to leave before anybody could see what's going on.
Yeah. Anything else? Yeah?
She's submissive. I think boldly submissive. If you can put those two words together, that's kind of the way it seems to me.
What's the term she used? She's used it a couple times.
Servant.
Servant. Yeah. Yeah. And that this whole, like, we talked about that, being laying at his feet, right? Laying there and covering his feet, laying there. Very submissive. Yeah. She understood that a lot of her, like we talked about on Sunday, her and Naomi's family unit really depended on this going forward. Very humble, but direct. I do like that she's very direct about it, right? Which I think is really cool. Servant, we talked about. We talked about the young men in town. Talked about cared for. I did say that already. They're all at the gate. I think it's interesting in verses 5 and 11, she says to Naomi, all that you say I will do. And then in verse 11, Boaz says, and now my daughter, do not fear, I will do for you all that you ask. It's neat the commitment these two have, right? I think it shows for both of them the level of the commitment they will go to say all. I don't think in these times, and even in the way they're writing, you would use expletives like we use. We all say, everybody does this, and all those people do that, right? If they say all, that was very literal. They meant it. That was the level of commitment. It wasn't to try to exaggerate that point, right? I think that's... Okay. Describe the actions of Boaz after he discovers Ruth. What did they say about Boaz's character? I think we talked about this a little bit. What are some of the actions that he does after he discovers Ruth? Yeah.
Well, the thought that occurred to me is that he was startled. Mm-hmm. Right? So he was not a man of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been like, if that was his normal custom, like women come to the threshing floor, you know, like sweet, whatever. He would have been startled. Mm-hmm. Something clearly out of the norm for him as a man of integrity.
Yeah, and a side point on that, she did wait for him to sleep it off a bit, right? If it was in wrong intentions, you may have just gone right in when he was drunk, or married. He wasn't drunk, married. The edge had been taken off. Is that fair to say? No?
It's very watered down back then.
What is that term? I wonder what that Hebrew term is. Thank you, Christy. I shouldn't exaggerate. That's not in here. What do you think that means when it says that he's drunk and married?
I don't know until he's full.
He was happy.
It says eaten and drunk. It does say when he was eaten and drunk. And his heart was merry. Anyways.
Is that just a past tense of drink?
Could be. Could be. Could be. All right. How dare I? Okay.
Brian doesn't come in and suggest something to me until I have drunk my coffee.
We're out of time, aren't we? Richard's standing out there.
Oh, really?
I didn't hear the bell. Is it 15? 15 till means we're over?
Yeah,
oh, thank you. Thank you for saving me, Bill. All right. Good class, you guys. I appreciate it.